Imagine spending millions of dollars on a state-of-the-art AI system. You roll it out to your entire company, you throw a massive launch party, and then, well, a year later, you realize that absolutely nothing has changed.
Right, your bottom line just hasn't moved an inch.
Exactly. Work is still slow, people are still stressed out. You basically bought a supercomputer to do the exact same broken process that you're doing yesterday.
Yeah, and what often happens next is that leadership, you know, they blame the employees for not knowing how to use the new software.
Which is just wild to me.
It is, because in reality, dropping that software into the company just highlighted how broken the daily operations and workflows were to begin with.
Yeah.
You can't fix a fundamentally flawed system just by, like, making it process data faster.
Welcome to today's deep dive.
Oh.
We are jumping right into what might be the most crucial warning label for the corporate world right now.
It's definitely a big one.
Yeah. We're pulling apart a fascinating document you brought to us. It's called The Org Change.AI Dispatch from May 2026, authored by Craig Russell. And our mission today is to look at this core thesis, which is simply design has got to precede deployment.
Absolutely. The overarching argument here is that artificial intelligence is not an IT upgrade.
Right. You don't just plug it in like a break room microwave.
Exactly. It is a fundamental structural organizational change.
So what does this all mean?
Well, it means we're facing something that Alexis Kryptovich, she is the senior partner at McKinsey, she calls it the great paradox.
The great paradox of.
Yeah, it's the foundational problem outlined right at the top of the dispatch. We have companies across the globe expecting massive, sweeping transformations from AI.
Sure, they're pouring like astronomical sums of money into these tools.
Right, with the expectation of changing their entire business model. Yet, according to the data, over 80% of these companies say they aren't seeing any tangible impact on their bottom line.
Wait, 80%?
Yeah, 80% are just stalled out.
That is a staggering failure rate when you consider the billions of dollars flying around the enterprise tech space right now.
It really is.
It reminds me of someone buying a million-dollar high-performance sports car, but they're trying to drive it in a school zone that is absolutely covered in speed bumps and stop signs.
That's a great way to put it.
The technology under the hood is incredibly powerful, but the environment it's operating in is actively designed to slow it down. The tech is fine, but the roads are fundamentally broken.
Exactly.
So if 8 out of 10 companies are sitting in their idling sports cars wondering why they aren't going 200 miles an hour, what is the biggest mental roadblock keeping them stuck in that school zone?
This raises an important question, and well, the answer is rooted in how we categorize the problem at the executive level.
Okay, so it's a leadership issue.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
The biggest barrier keeping them stuck is that leaders are treating AI as a tooling problem rather than an operating model and change problem.
Interesting.
The dispatch actually references a Stanford study that looked deeply at 51 different enterprise AI deployments.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the researchers found that adoption frequently faced immense resistance, particularly from staff functions.
Like who specifically?
Think human resources, finance, legal. They resisted because the AI was handed down as an IT tech project.
Ah, I see.
It was treated as just another software login credential emailed to the staff.
Rather than, you know, addressing how it actually changes their day-to-day life.
Exactly the problem. Kryptovich points out that it's the day-to-day workflows, the daily rituals around our ways of working that need to fundamentally change.
Okay, so what does that look like?
Think about a typical corporate ritual, right? Like the way a cross-departmental decision gets approved. You have meetings, you have email chains, you have a rigid hierarchy of sign-ups.
Oh, yeah, the classic corporate bottleneck.
Right. And if you drop a massive high-speed AI capability into that slow, broken daily ritual, the human system just rejects it.
That makes sense.
So the dispatch argues you have to unfreeze the organization's mindset first.
Unfreeze. Let's translate that term, unfreezing, because it sounds a bit like business school jargon.
Yeah, it does a bit.
I imagine it means you have to thaw out the old hardened habits before you can even attempt to mold new ones.
That's exactly it.
Because if people are fundamentally afraid of what this tool means for their livelihood, or if they just, you know, don't understand how it's supposed to fit into their Tuesday morning status meeting, they're going to push back.
Oh, totally.
Sometimes subtly, like just not logging in, or sometimes openly.
Which is human nature, right? If you don't unfreeze the culture and explain the why, any new tool just feels like a threat or like an extra chore.
Right, which leads right into the next major hurdle. Since we know this rigid mindset is the primary barrier, How are the successful 20% of companies actually reframing AI to get buy-in and restructure the work?
Well, the Dispatch has some wild case studies on this.
Yeah, I want to look at the logistics company first.
Okay, yeah. The contrast between the failures and the success is very sharp here. The Stanford study highlights this anonymous billion-dollar-plus refrigerated trailer logistics company.
Dave.
Every single year, they had to process over 100,000 maintenance invoices.
That is a lot of invoices.
And these were not clean, standardized digital files. We are talking handwritten faxes, erratic emails, transcriptions of phone calls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a completely unstructured, messy mountain of inputs. They had 7 full-time employees whose entire job, day in and day out, was just manually consolidating these invoices.
Just trying to match them to old templates and doing manual data entry.
Exactly.
Which sounds like an absolute nightmare of a job, just staring at blurry faxes of tire replacements all day long.
Right. It's a recipe for high turnover and high error rates.
Definitely.
So leadership decided to deploy open source and off-the-shelf AI to tackle this specific bottleneck.
Okay, how'd that go?
In just 8 weeks, they transformed this 7-person manual workflow into a 2-person governed model.
Wait, really? In 8 weeks?
8 weeks. They achieved 85% accuracy almost immediately, and suddenly they were processing these complex invoices in under 24 hours instead of weeks.
That's incredible.
But the critical lesson here, and the Dispatch hammers this home, is that building the AI tool was not the hard part.
Right. Writing the code was probably the fastest step in the whole 8 weeks.
Without a doubt. The real work was in the preparation. Before they could even deploy the AI, the organization had to sit down and simplify years of accumulated, inconsistent, messy templates.
Oh.
The human team had to look at thousands of variations of forms and reduce them to a smaller, strictly governed, usable set. They had to clean their own house before the AI could vacuum it.
I love that. So they didn't just point an AI at a pile of garbage data and figure it out. They redesigned the logic of how they process a bill first.
Exactly.
But we have to address the elephant in the room here. They went from a 7-person manual workflow to a 2-person governed model. What happened to the other 5 people?
Yeah, that's the big question. Well, the displaced capacity was intentionally redirected to other critical bottlenecks in the company that required human problem solving.
So nobody was fired?
Nobody was fired. Hmm. It was framed and executed as a people, process, and technology change, not a pure automation and headcount reduction story.
That's huge.
Yeah. And we see this exact same philosophy mirrored in another case study in the Dispatch involving an education technology company with over 100 engineers.
Okay, what did they do?
The leadership there made a very deliberate choice regarding their internal narrative. They framed AI to their engineering staff as a capacity multiplier.
Capacity multiplier.
Okay, yes. Explicitly stating and putting in writing that it was not a headcount-cutting mechanism. They shifted the entire internal conversation from a job threat to a discussion about organizational throughput.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second.
Sure.
Because I'm putting myself in the shoes of a mid-level engineer at that edtech company. When executives get up on stage at an all-hands meeting, use terms like capacity multiplier, and promise nobody's getting fired, a lot of employees are immediately translating that in their heads to, well, layoffs are coming in Q3.
Well, absolutely. There is an immense, entirely justified natural skepticism.
Right. So how do companies authentically bridge that trust gap without sounding like they're just spinning a threat into positive corporate jargon?
What's fascinating here is that the McKinsey research explicitly acknowledges this reality. Alexis Krifovich says, point blank, a huge trust gap exists today between leadership and the front line regarding AI.
Unsurprising.
Right. And you do not bridge that gap through empty slogans. You bridge it through transparency and highly visible executive sponsorship.
What does that look like in practice?
Well, go back to that logistics company with the invoices. How did they build trust?
Yeah, how?
The president of the company personally joined the weekly check-ins with the frontline invoice team to actively remove blockers. The executive leadership was in the weeds with them, taking their feedback, which creates authentic operational buy-in.
So the boss isn't just sending an email. They're sitting in the room asking, like, what is making this hard for you today?
Exactly. Furthermore, you build trust by acknowledging the risks openly to your staff. You don't just sell the magical productivity upside.
Right.
You have to talk about AI hallucinations. You have to admit that the AI will sometimes produce confidently wrong, low-quality output.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
By acknowledging that flaw, leaders validate exactly why the human expert is still crucial to the process. you build a culture of transparent risk management rather than a culture of blind technological faith.
That makes total sense. If you hand someone a tool that occasionally hallucinates facts and pretend it's flawless magic, the employee will spot an error on day one and lose all faith in the project.
100%.
But if you say, you know, this thing is incredibly fast, but it occasionally lies, so we need your years of expertise to catch its mistakes, you empower the worker. Which transitions us perfectly into wondering what the actual day-to-day job looks like when this is working right. We're moving away from humans as the manual doers.
We are.
The dispatch quotes Amar Aksha at Safe, who has a brilliant way to visualize this. He says, we need to think of AI agents as junior interns who haven't slept.
It is arguably the most accurate metaphor for the current state of enterprise AI.
It really paints a picture. Imagine an intern who just drank 12 double espressos.
Oh, yeah.
They can read 10,000 pages of documentation in a single minute. They're incredibly eager to please, and they're highly capable of generating massive amounts of work.
Bite.
But they have absolute zero common sense, no life experience, and they might accidentally delete the entire database or insult a client if you don't watch them.
Exactly. They need strict policy envelopes, they need access controls, and most importantly, they need their output audited by an adult in the room.
Right.
And that adult in the room concept is formally known as human above the loop oversight.
Human above the loop. I like that.
The American Arbitration Association, or AAA, provides a phenomenal concrete example of how this actually functions day to day.
Oh, they handle incredibly high stakes legal arbitrations, right?
Yes, very high stakes. They utilized AI squads to read through massive closed case files. The AI was tasked with compiling timelines of evidence and even proposing initial summary decisions based on the data.
But they obviously didn't let the AI finalize a legal judgment.
Oh, not at all. They redesigned the workflow so that the AI handles the grueling, heavy lifting of data compilation. It reads the 500 pages of emails and flags the dates.
Right.
But the human legal experts remain entirely responsible for the final judgment. The humans are elevated above the loop.
Okay.
They aren't typing out the timeline anymore. They're auditing the AI's timeline against key documents to ensure validity.
So the human becomes the editor-in-chief rather than the junior staff writer.
That is the exact mechanism. Antoine Besong from a manufacturing software firm called Poca put it very bluntly regarding physical workspaces.
What did he say?
He noted that AI might eventually do 99% of the preparatory work, but you will always have a human whose job is to validate those steps.
Yeah.
Because in his words, you cannot afford a mistake on a shop floor where safety is involved.
Right. People could get hurt.
Exactly. The nature of human accountability is changing, but the necessity of that human accountability is absolutely not going away.
That makes a lot of sense.
McKinsey's data backs this up, noting that most roles won't disappear entirely in the next 2 to 3 years, but they will be drastically reshaped.
Reshaped how?
Humans will move toward supervision, exercising judgment, handling weird exceptions that AI can't understand, and orchestrating these various digital tools.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Okay.
If our jobs are shifting from being the people doing the typing or the welding or the calculating to basically being the supervisors, mm-hmm. the babysitters of these manic, sleepless interns, doesn't that require a completely different core skill set from the workforce?
It absolutely does.
I mean, being a great writer is a very different cognitive skill from being a great editor of someone else's writing. Being a great coder is different from reviewing an AI's code for security flaws.
Yes. It requires a massive structural shift in skills. And you're hitting on exactly why the Pearson and AWS report cited in the dispatch is so critical.
Oh, what does that report say?
They emphasize that AI readiness cannot be a blanket corporate strategy. It has to be defined by persona.
By persona, meaning what?
Meaning you can't just buy an enterprise license for an AI tool, mandate a 1-hour training video for the whole company, and expect magic.
Right. Right.
The readiness profile looks fundamentally different for a C-suite leader versus a mid-level manager versus a frontline employee. It's a workforce capability transformation.
So what does that look like in practice for, say, a manager?
It means you have to map out what new skills your mid-level managers need to suddenly govern a hybrid team of digital agents and human employees.
Wow. Yeah.
You have to train that manager on how to identify when a task should be fully automated, when the AI should merely assist the human, and when the AI needs to escalate an edge case problem back to a human expert.
That is a completely new management muscle.
Completely new.
Okay, wait, I'm putting all this together. And if the roles are changing this drastically and the required skills are totally different and the processes have to be cleaned up first,
yeah,
companies are going to need a very clear map to navigate this. They cannot just wing it. And the source material gives us exactly that. It introduces a framework called the orgchange.ai 9-square grid.
Yes, the 9-square grid.
But I'll admit, looking at this grid concept, I'm a bit lost. If I'm a manager, how do I actually use a grid to fix a broken data pipeline? Can you break down how this architecture of change actually works without drowning us in business school frameworks?
Sure, yeah. The 9-square grid is designed to move organizations past just using compelling buzzwords and into coordinated action. It takes all this evidence we've been discussing and translates it into a practical map. On one axis, you have the three domains of an organization: people, process, and technology.
Got it.
On the other axis, it uses a very classic proven concept from Kurt Lewin on how change happens in three stages.
Which are?
Unfreezing the old way, changing to the new way, and then refreezing the new behavior so it sticks. So three domains multiplied by three stages gives you 9 distinct squares of intervention.
Okay, that makes sense. So the grid forces a leader to look at, say, the technology domain and figure out how to unfreeze it, change it, and refreeze it.
Exactly. Let's zero in on one specific intersection that's crucial. Square 5.
Square 5, what's that?
This is the intersection of process and the changing stage. This square holds perhaps the most vital warning in the entire dispatch.
Oh, lay it on me.
Going back to that Stanford study of 51 deployments, the researchers found that 77% of the hardest AI implementation challenges were completely invisible and intangible to the naked eye.
Really? Like what?
They weren't coding problems. They were change management, data quality, and process redesign problems. The overarching golden rule of Square 5 is this: organizations must avoid applying AI to broken workflows at all costs.
Oh, that makes me think of strapping a high-powered jet engine to a rusty shopping cart with a wobbly wheel.
That is a very vivid image.
Well, you have this massive million-dollar propulsion system, but the vehicle itself is structurally unsound.
Right.
If you fire up that jet engine, it isn't going to fly gracefully into the future. It's just going to violently crash into the canned goods aisle a whole lot faster.
That is exactly what happens.
But here's the practical question. How do companies even know if their process is ready for the jet engine? How do they know their shopping cart is broken before they hit the ignition switch?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture of the grid, it forces leaders to do the unglamorous, tedious work of process documentation first.
Ugh, process documentation.
I know, no one likes doing it. But the Stanford practitioners noted over and over that the hardest, most grueling work was making the infrastructure and data architecture visible before deploying the AI.
So you have to literally map out exactly how a decision is made today.
Yes, you have to trace the data. Think of the logistics company with their messy invoice templates, sitting down to standardize thousands of variations of a bill into a single format. That was Square 5 work.
Right. You cannot optimize a process that you do not deeply understand.
Exactly.
Which naturally brings us to the technology side of things.
Yeah.
Once the process is fixed, how do we make sure the jet engine we attach to it doesn't just fly off in the wrong direction? That brings us to Square 8 on the grid, right?
Yes. Square 8 focuses on technology and the final stage, refreezing, which means embedding the new AI-powered ways of working into a permanent, stable state.
Yay.
And the statistic the dispatch shares here is fascinating. 61% of successful AI projects had at least one prior failure.
Wait, over half of the successful ones failed first. That's actually pretty reassuring, honestly.
It suggests that true success comes from iteration. It comes from learning what doesn't work in your specific culture, stabilizing the AI into actual governed operating models, and stopping this corporate habit of running endless, isolated pilot programs that never actually scale.
Yeah, pilot purgatory.
Exactly. The dispatch highlights a large U.S. retail bank and ANZ bank to illustrate the stabilization phase.
What do they do?
Moving to cloud-based AI and autonomous agents in a highly regulated environment like banking isn't just an IT infrastructure upgrade. It is fundamentally a governance and trust-building program.
Right, because the stakes are so high.
Exactly. It forces mandatory alignment across risk management, compliance officers, customer operations, and business leaders.
So everyone has to be on the same page.
Everyone has to agree on where the AI's autonomy is acceptable and where the human guardrails must be firmly placed before you refreeze the new process into everyday operations.
Because If a bank's AI hallucinated a mortgage rate and automatically sent it to a customer, that is a catastrophic regulatory disaster.
It's a huge deal.
It's not just an oops moment. The governance, the safety checks, have to be baked into the technology itself. It cannot be an afterthought once the system is live.
And achieving that level of safety requires a profound cultural shift.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
You have to move from a legacy mindset of, you know, keep everything locked down and secure inside our local server to a collaborative mindset of how do we use advanced cloud-based AI in a way that actually satisfies our strictest risk expectations.
Right.
It's an organizational capability problem at its core, not a software selection problem.
So bringing all of these threads together for you listening right now, we started with a paradox. Massive financial investment in AI, but little to no bottom line impact for 80% of companies.
Right.
And through these case studies, whether it's a logistics team processing invoices, an ed tech firm writing code, a legal association arbitrating disputes, or a massive retail bank, a through line is incredibly clear.
It really is.
AI value only truly scales when leaders are willing to reimagine and redesign the work end to end. You have to build trust into the system with highly visible leadership.
Yep.
You have to clean your messy processes before you automate them.
Yeah.
And you have to establish continuous governance.
Exactly.
The wildest takeaway from all of this research is that the actual AI tool, the incredibly complex neural network, is often the absolute easiest part of the entire equation.
I think the most powerful way to summarize the mindset required moving forward is with the final realization from McKinsey featured in the Dispatch.
What's that?
They state quite simply, change management is no longer an episodic thing, it's a perpetual state.
Wow, a perpetual state.
We have to let go of the idea that we're going to finish an AI rollout, check a box, and then go back to business as usual for a decade.
Because the tech just keeps changing.
The technology will keep evolving at a breakneck pace, which means our processes, our governance, and our skills must be in a state of continuous, governed evolution.
A perpetual state of change. That is both exhausting and exhilarating, depending on how prepared you are for it.
Very true.
So I want to leave you with a completely new thought to chew on today. We talked a lot about humans stepping back to become the supervisors and the editors of these sleepless AI interns.
Right.
But think about this. If AI takes over all the repetitive, foundational, heavy lifting tasks, drafting the timelines, writing the basic code, organizing the raw data, how will the next generation of workers ever learn the basics?
Well, that's a great question.
If a human junior intern never has to struggle through writing a bad first draft or manually finding an error in a spreadsheet, how do they ever develop the deep expertise required to become the senior editor who knows how to spot an AI's mistake?
Yeah, that's wild.
The future isn't just about redesigning our workflows. It might require redesigning how human beings actually acquire expertise in the first place. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.